Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight. On, can we try that again?
Yeah, I'm right here. Yeah, it's better now.
Yeah, seems to be working perfectly.
As
thank you very much.
To yesterday.
Thank you very much, information technology guys. Okay, well, so, you know, guys, I take back my thanks. Try that again?
Yeah, let's just thank production.
Nah, I take back my thanks.
No. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
I take back my thanks.
Unfortunately, production, you know, I was cheering for your corner.
That was an instant fix.
Yeah.
Yeah, worse than instant porridge.
It was just the press of a button.
All was gone. Yeah, it's Friday, and it's some of us, it's time to celebrate. I mean, broke, but we are not going to be coming to work on Sunday like some people. But, this is one of those Fridays where a lot of people are broke, actually, because, well, it's the 13th. So the 20th is far, the 25th is far, the 30th and the 31st even far. So, I know, you know, behaving is more like mandatory when you are broke.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, well, today, here on Home Run, we bring you again yet another exciting topic. Though, just a little bit of, update. Not really an update, just, you know, jogging type of a thought, more like, okay, mind exercising type of a point of, you know, direction, the direction that I'm pointing you in to. I hope we are all looking at what's taking place in the Middle East. And actually, for the first time in a very long time, I'm proud to be African. You know,
is that not based off my comment?
based on landmass where I find myself right now.
And geographic location.
And where the world is, literally on fire. And that's the Middle East.
So whatever you do, guys, feel grateful.
You know, yeah.
That, we Africa. Oh, what was that that I said? I said that much of the global south is probably very thankful that we're not in a neighborhood.
We're not in the neighborhood where.
Of the Middle East where.
You know, Iran, Israel, or whatever is going on there. So, but that's not what we're here to talk about. Actually, we're here to talk about the opposite of what they are doing, because wars is one of those things that basically threatens, you know, heritage sites. You know, you blow them up and, it's not there anymore.
Yeah, which is one of the particular aspects also for our discussion today, because this is obviously something that was born from it happens already, Helmut. Let's also just identify that. It's probably also already happening. It's just the discussion that took place here in Windhoek a week and a half back is based upon, back in last week, is based upon, heritage preservation, which also includes conservancies. Yeah. Through the use of technologies.
Yeah.
Now they say digital technologies in my eye or eyes. Because I don't have one eye.
Thank God.
In my eyes. No, Helmut, don't go there. Don't even go there. In my eyes, you know, when you use the word technology today, colloquially, you automatically imply it is digital.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yes, that door handle on the studio door is also technology, because it allows you to open and close and be able to lock. Mm-hmm. And secure this particular, compartment of the studio.
Mm-hmm.
But when we sit and you think about the notion of, you know, heritage in its own right, what does heritage basically look like? So the heritage is usually anything to do with historical, value to mm-hmm. your country's particular, let's call it identity.
Yeah.
So we would say things like the Tweefontein rock art. Or the rock art that's in the Rongo Mountains. And I've got a very lovely story to share with us for today.
Please.
Because if you're going to ask guys, you know, why are we talking about this subject matter today? Because this is in a way building on a conversation that Helmut and I have done before, which was, remember the conversation where, the United Nations World Tourism Organization guy was here, the Georgian guy.
Yeah.
With the very forgetful, but also tongue-twisting name.
Tongue-twisting name. Who, the one who pointed out that, well, Namibia, tourism-wise, you guys are a perfecto example.
You are literally the template that should be followed.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, someone else is now in his position. It's now a woman that got voted in.
Mm-hmm.
And on their particular... In their particular literature review discussion, I didn't share it with you, Helmut. I just wanted to see what they had, but they had broken it up into so many pieces.
Yeah.
So to copy and paste every time to you and say, Helmut, read this. Helmut, read this. They had one from a country, Armenia, wine, heritage, wine heritage and culture. Another one from, that was sort of like an overall cultural assessment, tourism and culture. And, If you get the gist of what I'm getting to, dear listeners, you can realize that there's a combination of heritage preservation and tourism. Because you don't just go and preserve heritage for the sake of preservation. There's a dual goal that you're also trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
And in our discussion for today,
you want to preserve it,
yes.
And then,
the preservation should...
Then the financial aspects of it comes through tourism.
Yeah. Or through an industry that ultimately channels financing through.
Mm-hmm.
And the financing shows up in bakis and sometimes walks there. And, you know, they spend money.
Mm-hmm.
And one clear example also, if you want to see, for any listener who wants to know, how does that materialize? Museums are one of the best examples of heritage preservation sites, technically.
Yeah.
Okay, so museums technically have to deal with smaller artifacts, smaller particular items, and for a museum's particular role, museums sometimes have kiosks and restaurants and cafes in close proximity. Now, I'm not going to use...
Have employees.
That too. But in most cases, the employees, you know, it's not the return on investment analysis here that you have to apply. Okay, except now if you're like in the European countries, obviously, who sit with all the world's heritage and cultural and historical artifacts.
Questionably acquired. Sorry. Let's go on.
Yes. Of course, you know, I had to get off the poetic bandwagon for a minute with that interjection. But they, in the European context and in North America, they give you a projection of each part of the world's heritage and culture is what they're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
This particular engagement between the Namibian government, which obviously included MESAC, the super ministry, you know, the Ministry of Education, Innovation,
nice.
Youth, Sports, Arts and Culture. Hey, I got it right. Just like that. And that super ministry, they had a representative there, who was from the Directorate of Heritage and it has another particular longer name. They
the
obviously,
World Heritage again?
No, not the world. It was the final gentleman, Mr. Gabe, Manfred Gabe. He's from the ministry itself. Besides the lady that's from the National Heritage Council. They all explained that they're obviously, in Namibia's particular case, you've got a scenario of, climate change working as a eroding factor or as a damaging factor to the artifacts. Because most of the artifacts, for example, like the Tweefontein rock art, sits in an external environment. It doesn't sit in a nicely vacuum. I almost said vacuum packed. In a nicely air conditioned,
that'd be nice,
well preserved brick and mortar facility that you can preserve it there, you know, on site, in that site. No, many of the particular cultural and heritage deposits, like in a Namibian and an African context, are deposited across the country at physical sites.
Yeah.
Because the people back then, you know, were like, hey, you know what? Let's be artistic here on the side of a mountain.
Yep.
Now nobody can just, okay, besides if you're a mining company, just take it apart and then
get to the gold.
Yeah,
and then apologize the later with a couple of dollars.
We are sorry, you know. Yeah. We are sorry. We'll pay a small percentage of our dividends that we earned.
Nah, we'll create employment. They usually go with that.
Yeah, but then the employment is just 50 guys on site, you know, the security guards.
$100 a month. I mean, $1,000 a month. More like rent bucks a month.
But don't worry, you're getting free food, free accommodation. The shower is on us, yes.
Mm-hmm.
You must buy your own soap from that 100.
Yep.
Fun times, huh?
We are terrible.
Fun times. Look. Fun times. People don't need comedians. They just need us.
Yeah. No, they don't.
Yeah.
So, we're talking about the preservation of technology. I mean, the preservation of heritage site. And not just the preservation, but also the access. Because, a lot of us have, can't just, we don't have, we don't have money out of our pockets to go and visit these different sites. And I think that's where technology now comes in. Now, if you can just, map it and put it in some kind of way, it's either, virtual reality, augmented reality type of form, then you can easily access them, at the comfort of your living room.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think about your tourist, what does that mean about tourism? Like, why do I have to leave my house if I can view it through my VR goggles that I spent thousands of dollars on? But, we'll cross that river when we get there.
It's a notion in terms of river crossings.
Uh-huh.
In terms of Helmut, where the tourists, for example, I read a small report from investment house Simonis and Storm about the tourism sector, because I also wanted to see in terms of a broad length how does that factor into our discussion for today.
Yeah,
because here is the downside. Now, obviously, just to give the listeners the context, this particular platform, which I obviously attended, was a workshop.
Yeah,
a workshop for the people in the field. Which meant the technology, some technology students from the universities, and then the public officials, and then the UNESCO officials, and then the sponsoring organization, which is actually the government of Flanders, which is a local authority in Belgium. And this was the kind of conversation. Now, just to set the scene, let me set the scene for you again. We are the media.
Did you just say local authority?
Yes. The government of Flanders sponsoring this themselves through UNESCO to Namibia. The media is invited to a workshop that is an internal endeavor between the people talking to each other on that floor. But it doesn't transcend. Now, this is my first criticism, and I'm going to identify this as a criticism. And it doesn't transcend over into the broader community. Why do I say this, Helmut? Let's position the first argumentative point. Now, it doesn't matter if you want to be good cop, bad cop, or good cop, or bad cop.
Yeah.
I have to mention the three anomalies or the three variables that we can immediately fall into. But back in... when was Earth Day? The 1st of May. Yeah. Back in May, 1st of May, Earth Day, I sat through a presentation by the Namibian Nature Foundation where they had a French rock art scholar. She's a scientist, but her, I tried playing the audio here when I had to do the On the Radar that day, and her accent, her French accent was just too heavy. But anyway, getting to the point of what the, because I could understand most of the presentation. What she highlighted there. So the case study was the rock art contained in the Erongo Mountains. Now, the Erongo Mountains, the mountains literally, large part of it falls on private farmland to the right. If you're watching the image, it just visualizes it in your mind's eye. A large part of the Erongo Mountains falls in private farmland in the same region of Erongo. It's about 50 to 60 kilometers away from Omaruru. So I know that road, so I know how you know, which direction to enter from. And guess what? On the other side of the mountains, you find the constituency, where some of the green hydrogen products like the Taurus Green Hydrogen Village is based in. You get the Taurus, constituency. Now, there's also rock art there. Now, I'm showing you the economic investment and endeavors, which is a stark difference in terms of how heritage and cultural deposits play a key role in creating economic activity. On the right-hand side, where the private farms are, they've appointed tour guides. No, they've appointed local guides because, you know, obviously from the accommodation site to where the rock art is, you've got to walk a bit of a distance on the farm.
Yeah.
So they've appointed people. They've converted their farms into lodges. So there's accommodation facilities. There are refreshment facilities. So that's a lot of investment into infrastructure. And then they've got designated tours that you pay for on the site of the farm. So all these double cab Toyota buckies and Nissan buckies and Ford buckies that people are seeing driving here full of the tourists.
The hired ones.
Yeah, those rental ones. They drive directly to such sites.
Yeah.
They drive to such sites. Yes, it's 300 and something Ks away, but the people drive literally. So now they get there. They refresh. So they spend more money at that private establishment.
Yeah.
On the other side of the mountain, in the Taurus constituency, there's one dedicated tour guide who's willing to tap into this thing. He doesn't get tours. He doesn't get tourists visiting him.
It's a marketing issue.
It's a plain, just like you highlighted yesterday, the regulation issue in the trade dispute between Mexico and the US.
Yeah.
You can immediately see what the problem is. This one guy also has access to, to rock art. But because he sits in a communal land area,
yeah,
on the other side of the mountain is literally private farmland.
Yeah.
He sits in a communal land area. He doesn't get any support from his traditional authority. No one else is interested in tapping into this unspent and untapped economic potential. He's trying at best to make contact. He wants the National Heritage Council to play a pivotal role in terms of, because that's what the scientist said. That's not my words. He wants someone to support. He even reached out to the French, scientist, the lady, asking her, you know, can't you help? I need to market myself. So the basics in terms of business acumen is lacking on the side of this guy, which is in a communal land area.
Yeah.
They even tried, Helmut, at one stage, someone, because the lady herself was unclear in terms of whose endeavor it actually was, but they even tried establishing also a lodge of some sort of accommodation facility for tourists to get there, have a place to sleep over and stay at, meaning also spend money there, and then ultimately be led on tours by this guy to the local rock art deposits. Now, all I'm showing you is the direct link, is the direct connection between African heritage deposits, which carry much value because, firstly, they show some of the earliest signs of human
civilization.
Okay, we can also take the civilization part out of it, but you can also see the first formats of the earliest humans, how they were trying to communicate. Because the White Lady of Tweefontein, or that Tweefontein rock art, why it's known as White Lady, it's because of the pigmentation.
It's painted in white.
Yeah, it's painted whitish, or it might have been because of time that it became, the discoloration that it became white. Those particular deposits indicate or tell historians and the archaeologists in the world, this is what the earliest humans did. They took account of what activities they were doing and they painted it in pictures. It's a pictogram. Mm. It's a pictogram. The same thing that the Egyptians had, which is hieroglyphics. But remember, the differences between a rock art painting and hieroglyphics is in a rock art painting is about a whole event. The hieroglyphics is supposed to be each word, which is a symbol, translates into the whole sentence.
From a dead language.
Yeah.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, exactly.
The best we can do is assume.
Yeah.
That's all.
And in many cases, Helmut, it was also a notion in terms of back then, those ancient civilization times, for example, like in Egypt, ancient Egypt. The pharaohs needed a way to communicate government policy. And how do you do that? You carve them into stone.
Literally.
You carve them into stone to say, this is the property of Dwight. Do not enter. Beware of dog or dogs.
That means there is no margin for error.
Yeah. And if you couldn't decipher that pictogram, those hieroglyphics along that pillar or that column.
That's it.
Yeah. You and the dogs would become best mates. Yes.
Yeah.
Best of friends.
I can imagine how difficult was it to send a message back then.
Well, and that's what made it so cumbersome, because from carving into stone slabs, that is what led to the invention of papyrus, which is the first, one of the earliest forms of paper.
Yeah.
But apparently someone else beat the Egyptians to the first form or creation of paper. Someone else, it was one of those other Middle Eastern guys. But the Egyptians used papyrus, which comes from the specific plant they had access to.
Yeah.
Because remember, paper is not just paper. Some plants give you a certain quality versus other plants. Not all plants give you the same paper.
The same quality, paper quality.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, well, that makes sense. Before we take a commercial break, one thing that is, you know, obviously, one thing about heritage sites that, covered in this discussion, or basically, something to be referred to as a heritage site, it must already be in existence. We can't just go out there and say, you know what, we are going to build a heritage site. Although maybe you can do that, but it's mostly, the term is mostly used to describe something that is, that has a story behind. You know, it's something that is, that's already in existence. Mm. Yeah. One of my favorite places is in a country of Mauritius.
Mm.
And this is basically the ruins of Kumbisale, which is sometimes known as the capital of, but before commercial break.
The wait is over. The deals are here. It's Big Red Weekend. For 4 days only, ShopRite brings you massive savings of up to 50% off. Like 800 grams Nescafe Recoffee Instant Coffee Refill. Only $99. 10 kg Top 4 Super Maize Meal. Just $118. H Twin Saver 1-ply Toilet Rolls. Only $45 per pack. 36, 42, 45, 50, 68, or 76 Pampers Disposable Nappies. Or 35, 40, 46, or 52 pants. $179 per pack. Don't miss out. This weekend only. Get up to 50% off. Valid until 16 June 2025, only at ShopRite.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
And welcome back to Home Run. Where was I?
You were still going to say something.
Yeah, my favorite place that actually, one that I think is worth preserving, since we're talking about the preservation of world heritage. Now, Kumbisale is, you know, is assumed to be one of the capitals of the Ghanaian Empire, because, you know, it's, well, it's believed that the Ghanaian Empire had two capitals.
Yeah.
One for more like mostly just the, you know, their economic activities, like, where they were, it's basically their CBD where they're conducting all these business activities.
Mm.
And one was the, you know, one was the administrative, you know, it's the administrative capital where the king resided and all the laws were made.
Yeah.
Now, Kumisale right now is in ruins, and it's found an idea that the empire was that big, because Kumisale is now, it's now in modern day Mauritania. And it's in ruins.
Which country's at capital was this supposed to be?
The Ghanaian Empire. Not Ghana, the country. The Ghanaian Empire.
Okay.
Yeah.
Overall.
Overall.
Yeah.
Now, and this is an empire that is said to have, you know, to have been, the Ghanaian Empire was in existence from, we're talking about, 1000 to 300 to mid 1200. Is it, I'm not sure if this is BC or,
is it common era?
It's just C, common era, yeah.
So common era, you have to take like our time, if you count our time frame.
Uh-huh.
So it would, if it's positive, then it would increase, that would, it, because if it says BCE before common era, it would be the BC before Christ.
No, for these ones, they just indicate C, which is more like, you know, Sika, basically, approximately.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this place basically is one of those places. And by the way, a lot of people, what they don't know is that, what I also didn't know until I think it was Chicken that pointed that out was a country in Africa that has the most pyramids is not Egypt.
Mm.
Is it Sudan?
It's Sudan, yeah.
It's Sudan. Yeah. Because you have to understand that if you went back to the time period when these pyramids were new, that was a thriving empire. There were thriving empires that were staying there, and they basically left a story behind that needs to be told.
Yeah.
But to tell that story to the next generation, you first have to preserve it. Now, the preservation part is now where you now have, a lot of issues, because a lot of properties basically that needs preserving around the world have suffered vandalism. Have suffered war.
Yeah.
And, you know, South America is a perfect example of this. But now when it comes also to preservation, South America also is one of those a very good example.
Mm.
Because they have, they have a lot of, Incan, Mayans and Aztec ruins that are now have been preserved fairly well. And they are still in very good conditions right now. And one thing that a lot of people admire now when they visit that part of the world is there are some temples that sort of like use some very amazing technology where invisible technology. It's not witchcraft. Relax. And it's not a holy father. This is just it's an architectural design that's built in a way that it amplifies sound.
Mm.
Yeah. And also there's one where, there's one that's designed. I think it's a temple that was used to worship some kind of, snake god. And one specific time of the year, the stairs aligns in the sun where the shadow shows, where the shadow show looks like it's a snake that's ascending.
Yeah.
Yeah. So all this now requires a lot of amazing construction. Now, if you're going to turn that into a tourist site, first of all, you wanna understand what the heritage site is for.
Yeah.
Have you seen Slumdog Millionaire?
Yes.
You picture where homeboy is trying to.
There's one scene I don't want to remember, but I've seen it.
We all don't want to remember that scene. But there's this scene where homeboy is too broke. He decides to pretend to be a tour guide.
Oh yeah, I remember at the Taj Mahal.
At the Taj Mahal, homeboy is lying through his teeth,
and he gets paid. Because he saw the tour groups walking by. That's why, with the tour guides.
Mm-hmm.
And then it decides to do the same thing.
It decides, you know what? This can't be that hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now, The way that the way that we basically see this preservation taking place, especially in terms of technology, is the digitization would be a very brilliant idea.
Mm.
Because what do you want to do when you want to reach out to people? Figure out the best medium to reach them through. So if you want to educate people on a certain subject, what would be the best way to do it? The reason why we put a lot of information we want to communicate through social media is because we know everyone has a smartphone. Well, almost. I have a few people that I've seen using a Katosh. But the point is, you have access to a smartphone somehow.
Yeah, now, somehow.
How do you digitize? Now, I think this is where the question now of tech infrastructure now comes in.
Yes.
First, you have to, because you can't just digitize, because first of all, you have to find a storage.
And also the use. Uh-huh. What are you digitizing for?
Yeah.
Now, remember the comment that I made a little bit earlier about we the media were invited on that day one.
Mm-hmm.
And then I sat there observing, you know, what's the overall aim here? And it's people talking to each other. Okay. You've heard of the term echo chamber, right?
Yeah.
I was going to take a swig of my water. You remember the term echo chamber? Now, it's one of the few times I've seen echo chambering take place.
In what way?
In a way where people meet, they invite us, the media, show up. Yes, it's content. Yes, we can make content from it. You show up, but if you're going to be a real observer, Helmut,
mm-hmm.
then you realize the echo chambering that people participate in. Hence the reason why I gave you the example of the Erongo Mountains, the rock paintings here in Namibia discussion.
Yeah.
Where literally you've got two sides that sit with the same thing, but on the one side of the mountain, the people have access to market. And what I mean by access to market, guys, they literally went out and they promoted themselves in order to get tour guides to bring the tourists to them. On the other side, there's a guy who he doesn't know where to start, what to do. Anyone that comes and visits him or the phone call that he gets, he literally just says, okay, but are you bringing tourists? In that kind of a desperation scenario.
Yeah.
The reason why I highlighted that is because the culture and heritage people speak with each other. And now they're talking just with the IT guys. With the information technology guys.
Yeah.
And with the geospatial departments, because there were two departments of the two universities, one from NUST, one from UNAM there, so they had students there. But they're just talking to each other. The weirdest thing here is, Helmut, when it comes to heritage, the heritage product was created by someone. Remember you said earlier, what do you need to do to create a heritage product
mm-hmm.
or to create a deposit of a heritage product? In many cases, it's something that has had to have stood the test of time. It had to survive, firstly, being forgotten.
Mother Nature's test.
Mother Nature's test. Secondly, colonialism in our case in Africa. Uh-huh. And then thirdly.
Are you still buying data hoping it will last? Then switch to Paratus. Buying gigabytes is so old school. With our mobile LTE prepaid packages, you take charge. As we invest in time on our network, enjoying the freedom of uncapped data. When you buy a 1-day, 7-day, 14 or 30-day package, you get uncapped data usage. For the duration of the package, no matter how much data you use. Explore our range of Paratus mobile LTE prepaid packages and enjoy the speeds of up to 10 megabytes per second. And most importantly, remove the uncertainty about how long your data will last. Contact us today at 083-300-1000 or visit our website at www.paratus.africa/Namibia. Terms and conditions apply. Always
prepare, Paratus. Great news! Input just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of IMBA? Get all exclusive features for just $36 Namibian a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything IMBA has to offer at an unbeatable price. IMBA. where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
And welcome back. We are 11 minutes into the hour of five. Now,
where was I? Mm-hmm. So, it has stood the test of
the
time.
The test of time, yeah.
Mother Nature. Colonialism, yes. Then obviously also then the re-education component of things. Because here's the discussion that I think for the parents listening now in the drive time session right now to us. How many times have you guys as parents taken your kids to a museum? Not to church, not to your aunt and uncle or your parents' houses or to the malls, to a museum as a family outing. It's a pivotal question to ask, Helmut, because one of the key things is, in Namibia, we constantly think Namibia's heritage is only for the tourist that flies in, that self-drives in a $1,000 a day bucky to the Erongo Mountains. It's only for them. That's why the product exists. Not really.
Believe me, that's not the most painful thing about some of the museums I visited.
In the movie.
From the entrance. Tank, liberation struggle. Now, see, with all due respect to our liberation struggle history, guys, we had a history before the liberation struggle.
Yes.
Yeah, the fact that we just gloss through that.
I know which museum you're talking about.
I know you know.
Yeah. You see, we all know that museum if you've been there.
Look. Yes.
Yeah.
I get it. We have a very disturbing past. Yeah. And it's one of our preservation. We have to preserve it. But we also have to acknowledge that we had a history before the liberation struggle.
Mm.
Let's preserve that. And then let's just build up as we go. And this is one of the biggest problem I have with a lot of African history books.
Mm.
Once upon a time, slavery. Oh, come on.
Or once upon a time, it starts at, we were here and then somehow we jumped to the First World War. We come back in a zigzag and then South Africa miraculously
just pops up from
just,
the blue.
Just owns Namibia and then everything starts from 1920.
Like, what happened before this time period? Because, there were events because, we did not just pop up from the blue.
Mm-hmm. Fall out of the sky.
Yeah, fall out of the sky. And then white people were like, oh, right, we saw them falling. Colonialism time.
Yeah. There are people there. Okay.
Fine.
And then
go.
We applied terra nullius.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, you guys just showed up. So this is our land, not yours. Yeah. So the way that we look at the preservation of, the way that we also, more like just define, heritage is that, we just want to, we're turning it more into, how do I put this, we just want to, make people sentimental every time they show up. They're like, okay, you know what, this is what they did to us. Yeah, that also needs preserving. Excellent. But before that, now, how am I going to explain to my kids? Before that, what was?
Yeah.
Yeah. So now that's where a lot of, that's where a lot of places, and a lot of heritage sites like, like the rock painting, for example.
Mm.
Now, or that's where they come in.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is one of those very irrefutable proof. That shows that it was not terra nullius. They were people.
And you know what's also heritage in Namibia, Helmut? Buildings.
Mm-hmm.
Buildings.
Oh, yeah.
Remember the discussion we did last year about the fort, the Alta Vista fort, that obviously will now become a different kind of a cultural installation now. This fort here right next to Windhoek High School, that particular fort. Which is just the other, which was the first national museum.
Yeah.
Before the other, I can't use the other name, guys, because then people might come and beat me up.
Independence?
Yeah, the Independence Museum.
Mm-hmm.
But there's another name. You know the name that I sometimes use. I can't use that name. Yeah.
It's Friday, dude. I want to have a good Friday.
Yeah, I don't want people showing up at the gate. And so, yeah, you. But anyway, so the building itself. Is Namibia's oldest building, the fort.
Yeah.
The fort, the Alta Vista fort.
Mm-hmm.
I might be off between Windhoek and Swakopmund, But the Alta Festa Fort is one of the oldest buildings in the country. Just so the people know that. It's one of the oldest buildings in the country. That is heritage in itself, Helmut. There are houses here somewhere close in the suburb where we've got the studio that are the old German design houses. Mm-hmm. That's a heritage site. The, what's the other building's name? The Parliament building.
Well, there's this oldest street that we always reference to.
Which one?
The oldest street, the one that's Krupp not...
Straße. Not Krupp. Krupp is now and Dimbatoiwe Street. I know the street that you're talking about. Namibia's oldest street. Uh-huh. That runs past Brewers.
Towards the side of, Vika service station.
Yeah. That street is also a heritage installation. The street itself is a heritage installation. Mm-hmm. There's another street here known as Jan Jonkerweg. Jan Jonker Road or Jan Jonker Street. It's this one that runs here through, Klein Windhoek. For this part of Klein Windhoek, right past the Cuban embassy. And it leads you, obviously, that street leads you to Maromol.
Yeah.
That road was literally the road that Jan Jonker used.
Huh?
That's literally the road he used to because you have to imagine this without these houses, without these particular, what you call it, modern installations of homes, suburbs, tarred roads and everything. Just imagine, Helmut, it was just these hills with these trees. In between, obviously, you had some wildlife, you know, like they're close to me. I've got the friendly neighborhood, you know, primate squad. I won't say the name because literally people would show up at the gate. But you know who I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
They are there between State House and Centaurus, you know. They sometimes show up there and they tell us, the drivers, you know, the motorists, "How's it, my bro?" And we're all like, "Okay, sharp, get out of the way." But anyway, now, just imagine this was just green.
Yeah.
And from here, he would just, in order to gain access to Rehoboth,
yeah,
he literally would follow this route. And then you can pull the road literally down south. Now imagine it was just, there was no tar road. It was just two track for wagons and for horses. That's it. Now, that in itself is heritage. That is heritage. People can debate, argue from an African perspective, a Namibian perspective, what kind of heritage. Each group in Namibia carries a heritage. What you call it? It's like an allocation. It's like a deposit. It's like an investment in Namibia's identity.
Yeah.
Each group in Namibia carries that investment. Now there's a bunch of other particular people that are obviously, making particular statements about who was supposedly the first people in this zone known as Namibia. Don't worry. I'll leave that up to the genealogists and the archaeologists. The reports are out there outside of Namibia, which is also one of the particular sad things.
Another problem.
Yeah, because like my source, who I live with, technically my sister, I mean, she discovers that there's an expert on click languages at the University of Los Angeles, California. No, California, not Los Angeles, UCLA. There's an expert on Namibian groups in Germany. There's an expert in Japan. There's an expert in South Africa. There's a Namibian that's an expert who's retired, was at UCT in Cape Town in South Africa. The question that I'm also highlighting to you right now is, the preservation also comes with data. Now remember the audios that I shared with you and the video. The guys from UNESCO were talking about using fancy satellite technology
to drones
and everything is through a website, you know, that's sort of like real time analysis and all that stuff. But the first and foremost level that you always start with when you codify or when you capture information is you write it down, you put it in a book, you publish it, and it gets distributed to all your knowledge centers through your country. All the people that I explained to you right now, in between, my source, aka my sister, also told me that the Michigan Institute of Technology, MIT, the world famous MIT, is also now doing its best to become an expert in Kwekwe Govap. One of Namibia's languages. Do you know why, Helmut?
Why?
The oldest languages in the world are click languages.
Yeah.
The oldest languages in the world are click languages.
So if you went back in history far enough, we're all clicking.
No, Helmut. A no and a yes.
Okay.
Start in between. Yes. I'll start with a yes.
Yeah.
Obviously, how you can prove how there's one human race, because this also defeats the explainer that people say, you are a different race, I'm a different race, that kind of mentality,
yeah.
Is you, the genealogists, the people that study genes and blood and diseases, will tell you, Helmut, I can receive a blood transfusion from you.
Yeah.
You, the same, vice versa.
Yeah.
Dependent on that, we blood have group. The same blood group. Because there is like four or five of them. If you don't have any of those blood groups, then you're obviously an alien. You're literally a sci-fi situation.
An anomaly.
Yeah. Or you must be the people from that isolated island from India. We're talking about prehistoric peoples.
Yeah.
Now the sun groups are also identified as prehistoric peoples.
Yeah.
Because they live as they've been living for millions of years. And here's one of the best scenarios, and I won't also troll one of our colleagues and former colleagues. I was asked here in the studio once, yeah, how do we know that, you know, when scientists say something is 100,000 years old, how do we know that is true? And I could hear this is someone speaking from a biblical bias, from a Christian religion bias. Because there are many people in this country also who believe that the Bible is literally the truth. Now, there's a whole bunch of fairy tale stuff in that book. Believe me, I'm a Catholic. You can come, brah. I'm ready for that fight.
Yeah, just so we're clear, that was Dwight. But
yeah,
no.
Yeah, so the discussion that I'm highlighting there has also been, do you even know, Helmut, that there's been a debate about where in Africa is the cradle of life?
That's a good question, because Africa is a continent.
Yeah. But do you know that there are authorities who are not African that are debating against South Africans? Remember in 2022, the South Africans made a discovery. Not Lucy, the other hominid that they discovered, the skull, which was almost 400 to 500,000 years old.
When was that?
2022, 2023-ish. The South Africans could carbon date. Carbon dating, if you don't know, dear listeners, in this discussion that we're having here, which is, you know, sort of like amateur archaeology.
It's nothing to do with dinner.
Yeah. So carbon dating is based on, they measure the carbon in the bone, in the fossil, in the skeleton remain. Now, one of our colleagues always loves, you know, sort of like throwing tomato sauce on that carbon dating discussion, because a guy went and thought he discovered some sort of a prehistoric human, and they discovered when they truly tested the bone, the jawbone that this guy picked up, it was just a common pig that he had discovered in his backyard. It was the bone remains of the common pig. And it was something like 20 to 30 years old.
Which in is it anthropology?
Yeah.
Which in anthropology is like 5 minutes ago.
Yeah. So for anyone to think that small explainer that I just highlighted to you about the guy who thought he discovered something that looked unique and old and ancient, but when it was properly tested, they literally discovered, no, but this is a common pig jawbone. So if anyone is asking, how is the carbon dating mechanism foolproof? I just explained it to you. But another example of heritage that sits in Namibia that is like obvious for all.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the geography of the country. Look at the animals of the country. Look at the plant species of the country. Look at the weather you have in the country. All of these, Helmut, is the reason why the tourist flies to Namibia.
Plus we have the oldest desert.
Yeah. Plus we're the country with two deserts. Remember this. Now, you asked the question earlier. What is the difference between that tourist saying, ach, you know what, I've got internet for days. My internet is 5 cents a month.
Mm.
Why must I care? Why can't I just view it? Well, because they realize their weather is not the best. I've seen it. It's not the best. If you speak to any Namibian that has been in places like England, London, France, Germany, when they say when it gets overcast, have you heard of Namibians become sick because they haven't seen the sun for months? That is the situation. Now imagine that on the local population.
Haven't seen the sun for months.
For months. Hence the reason why you can understand why why those tourists in those countries tell their whole family, let's go to Namibia. And they come to Namibia because besides seeing rock art, you have clean air. You have sunlight all day long. Yes, it might be cold currently right now because between May and September is our peak season of tourism because it's their summer season. Mm-hmm. They get holidays that side.
And then come and enjoy winter.
And they come in our winter and they still walk around with spaghetti tops while we are busy.
We are freezing cold and we're like, how the heck are you doing that?
And they're saying, no, this is not cold. Don't worry. Yeah. Sorry for the reenactments there, guys. But literally.
That's uncalled for.
No, but that is what I've been told before. And I was so offended by the guy because I was wearing my whole wardrobe on me. And he was telling me, this is not cold, Dwight. What are you talking about? I'm like, bruh, what are you on? So it's the whole Namibia is the whole particular, let's say, the selling feature, the package that you've got to work with for the tourist.
Now, for the most part, especially, you know, for the most part, from the, you know, from the audio and, from the audio and the link you shared, one thing I learned was that, the discussion of, you know, the of preservation of heritage and the access of, and, you know, record keeping and data gathering about all this, you know, about everything, heritage wise we have is that it's all more like, you know, the whole discussion was more like tailored towards the physical infrastructure.
Yeah.
Like, you know, ancient ruins, you know, ancient drawings, ancient this and ancient that.
Yeah.
But, ancient, like, you know, stories and folk tales fall into part of this preservation of the heritage in discussion here. Because, you know, if you ask me, that is where, that one would not only benefit, especially, that one is where basically the entire entertainment industry in any part of the world has based a lot of their stories based on, you know, on old folk tales.
Yeah.
You know, Mermaid, Thor, and except Wakanda, someone just scratched their head and came up with that. But if you look at it, and also a large part of Marvel has nothing to do with Norwegian mythology. Mm. Thor didn't fight in all those wars. And what pisses me off is how those two dwarf brothers that, you know, that made the hammer are left out of the Marvel story. That's not funny. Because that's, you know, that's, those guys would be suing you for intellectual property.
Yeah.
You stole their works. But, now the thing is, video gaming and, video games and movies and songs, a lot of them are based on historical figures, especially movies and video games. Take Assassin's Creed, for example.
Mm.
Is it, Assassin's Creed, Shadow Warrior? I'm not sure if it's out or it's coming out this year. I haven't played that game in a while, where they are featuring Yasuke. Now, Yasuke is a real human being that left, I think, modern day Mozambique with a Jesuit priest. And is one of those first black people, if not the first person to go to the country we now know today is Japan. Basically, it was still Japan. Now, here's the thing. The gentleman that is a real historical event. And stories are told even in Japan on how people reacted when they saw the first, you know, really tall guy.
Mm.
Yeah. And duck. And the story goes that, the daimyo ordered him to sort of like, thought maybe he was putting on some type of color. They ordered a bunch of his men to sort of like, scrub him and see if it will wash off.
Yeah.
Upon noticing that it was not washing off, he realized, you know what? This is one heck of a dude. So instead of putting him in some plantation to work for cotton like some people did, they actually decided to embrace and assimilate him into their society.
Mm.
I'm telling you. The West is just broken when it comes to, like, when it comes to the first meeting with the, you know, when it comes to the first meeting with, with people of different skin tone. Especially if you're not Catholic at that time. Oh boy, that was bad. As the Irish. I mean, they were white. The only mistake was they were not Catholic.
No, they were.
In the name of God, all that was done, by the way. Now you see the problem. Now, I feel like we have to factor in folk tales and, traditional songs.
Mm.
Yeah, because one thing I like about, this discussion is that we have living museums in Namibia. This is where, with the rapid increase in urbanization and the rural to urban migration, you can see that the traditional way of life will soon be a tourist attraction on its own. Yeah. It already is, but it's just going to, we are losing it more and more the more we urbanize. And then you see that and also with the increase in Silver City construction material, aka Kambashu, which is now making its way into rural areas. I know. It's making its way into rural areas. That means the traditional way of building houses, with thatch is also being lost. So that's where I think living museums at the end of at the end of the day, if we are not going to come up with a better way of sort of like preserving that culture, not saying that living museums are not better. I mean, you guys are doing great. We are going to end up in a situation where you will basically, you and I, we'll have to put our kids in our, in our rental four-wheel drives and then drive them to living museums and tell them that, I grew up in a house like this. And they'll be like, yeah, nah, ain't no way you were not wet, under heavy rain in that.
Which the brick and mortar.
Thatched house.
The thatched house.
Yeah.
It's not just that, Helmut. There's another aspect, dimension also too. What you just highlighted. Do you know that there are houses in this city that are 70 years old as we're sitting today? 70.
Okay, that is, what do you call that? I've been practicing. Is it a Christus Kirk?
No.
What's that?
That church is, that Christus Kirche.
Kirche?
Christus Kirche.
Christus Kirche.
Yeah.
Sounds like a threat.
Just say Christian church. That's what the thing
is. Yeah, that's why I'm saying it sounds like you are threatening our Lord and Savior. But
so that church is 100 years old. Yeah, that's it. That church is 100 years old. But then you can go to what house is old? There's a bunch of buildings also in this vicinity that's pretty old. So when I start from the buildings itself, obviously, yes, many of them were obviously installed pre-independence times.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a building method, for example, that still stands till today in some parts of southern Namibia. For example, there's a church at Gibeon, which was, I think, Hendrik Witbooi's own particular sort of like church. He wasn't Catholic, please. So you can't use the word parish. It was like his scenario there. They used clay. And clay today in the greater world of climate change is the best material to construct, to build with for your homes, for residential purposes.
You have no idea how loud I laughed when I came across a video of how clay, more like mud houses, were being promoted by a bunch of guys in the US as environmentally friendly. I think we should move towards this. Like, move.
Did you see the one that was constructed? You remember when we had the hemp discussion?
Yeah.
So not in last year, in 2022, the lady that I interviewed for our hemp discussion, Angela Prusa, she went to the UK in 2023. Now I think I follow her on Facebook, and the friends that she has there, they literally built this house made of hemp in a very wet climate of the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, so she was, indicating that this thing is of use specifically in the agricultural sector. No, not agriculture, in the construction sector. Yeah. And I was like, okay. And they highlighted rain, wind. Obviously, it just depends on how the mixture is made for the construction of the dwelling. And I was like, okay, that's cool. That's really good.
So we're not looking on the bright side of hemp.
No, we're not looking on the bright side of hemp.
Look, but we should really look on the bright side of hemp. I mean, we vote politicians because we look on their bright side.
That's just the thing. We're looking at their bright
side. Their bright side, because
we're not looking at the bright side of what do you want, bright side?
That's a very long statement. We're not looking at the lying dark side. We're just saying,
I'm talking about us, as
voters,
the electorates, mm-hmm. the voters, the electorates' bright side. What is it that we want as a bright side? Not what do we want to channel through them as a bright side? Okay, look, technically also the same thing.
Same WhatsApp group.
Yeah.
But, okay, lawmakers have their reason behind that. But when it comes to preservation, again, just across the road from Robert Mugabe, across the road from the, from the Independence Museum, you find also more like, I think it's an extension of one of the oldest museums. You also find a lot of things there. The first thing that you find at the entrance is a canoe. That's a good one.
Yeah.
So all these things goes to show, and one thing about the, about artifacts is that the older they are, the more valuable they become.
Yep.
Yeah. The more people will want to see them.
Yep.
That's why everyone wants to see the Mona Lisa. And now the threat of everything that we want to preserve, or more like preserve, as part of our heritage. Albeit, if every country was to get back their cultural heritage stuff, the British Museum will be empty. Because the Greeks have been negotiating like for a very long time to get their stuff back. But the British, just stole everything and then wrote a piece of law that made it illegal for everyone to come and steal back what was stolen from them. I mean,
those guys are.
Look, some of these things are just.
They are malicious.
Look, some of these jokes write themselves. Yeah. One thing that you see is that, what that's leading to is because when they have gathered up a lot of stuff that's now has a very valuable. So that brings us back to the discussion of what you said about having a gold. Our central bank is proposing.
Oh, the gold reserve.
A gold reserve. You sort of like put yourself on a market, and a lot of marauders will look at you and go like, we can make money off of that. So about over, I think, 1,000 artifacts. Actually, not 1,000 times that. back in 2023, Reuters reported that the British Museum launched a public hotline asking for help to locate some 2,000 missing artifacts. So things are being stolen in a place that is as secure as the British Museum. Mm. So until we basically get and take interest into preserving and protecting our own, heritage related, related things, they are just going to be finding themselves in private hands, most likely outside of Africa.
Mm.
Now, this whole British Museum putting up information to asking the public to help them find stolen artifacts. Actually, I first came. I remember talking about this back in 2023 because a lot of people on social media were going like, why should we help you?
Mm.
Find something that was stolen from you and you also stole. I mean, social media just took pushed that out of proportion. So. Culture falls in this category.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest fear is the loss of knowledge about these things, because for a lot of things, for a lot of things like the Ghanaian Empire, One thing we know is that, well, it's something that took place somewhere between, from 100 to 300 AD. 100 to 300 AD. So a lot of knowledge, because, you know, a lot of knowledge pertaining to some of the very important events that took place in this empire were obviously documented, but then, a lot of things were basically lost because of multiple tribal wars that took place, obviously, and then leads up to colonialism. And a lot of things are lost.
Or simply just the guy passed away who started the empire, and then,
you know, they say
sibling squabbles took
power struggle, you know, power struggle.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then in South Africa, you have, thing that was, discovered in 1991, 1992 by a guy that, that was flying a small plane and crashed there. That's when I think the place was discovered, 75,000 years old, Adam's calendar.
Yeah.
Now, that shows that there were people walking the southern part of Africa 75,000 years ago.
Yes.
And they left, you know, something that is a lot of, anthropologists, I think, experts can only assume was some type of a calendar. Right now, we have no clue how to use that calendar. Now, it's very easy to lose knowledge. It's that easy. All you just have to do is take a Nokia 3310, give it to Gen Z, watch them try to figure out how to work it.
Oh, remember the archaeological find that I spoke about, where in Africa there's a debate between where is the actual cradle of humanity.
Yeah.
So back in March, remember that the archaeological find that was the recent one in South Africa, it's the one that is known as Naledi. Its name is Homo, is known as Homo Naledi.
Yeah, I remember hearing the whole Naledi thing. But that's a very common name in South Africa.
Yeah. So obviously they tried to, you know, name it in honor of South Africa, where it was discovered. Back in 28 March of this year, Live Science wrote and had an article that said, Homo Naledi buried their dead 250,000 years ago, according to a new update regarding that particular development. I mean, when you start off with things like that, you can obviously see, people can obviously then see how cultural heritage, preserving it. Just ask yourself, dear listener, if you're sitting there in the cab or in the car, I mean, how is it that something has lasted so long for thousands of years up to this point? Well, first and foremost, no one showed up there with their grubby hands, you know, to come and smear tomato sauce over it. First and foremost.
Thank you, Vince.
Second thing is also, primarily, these are sometimes in remote areas that were not once considered to be suitable for people living there.
Mm-hmm.
What many people forget is also how Helmut, what was one of the best comments, or sort of like characteristics I've ever heard of? How people can see the first aspects of ancient civilizations is they look at how you prepared your food, how you lived, meaning did you live on high altitudes or do you live in low-lying areas? Did you live close to water sources or were you dependent on certain particular functions to access water? Stuff like that. That's what archaeologists look at. Next thing that archaeologists also look forward to is whether you were a smithing kind of a culture. So what is smithing? Smithing is, did you have blacksmith capabilities?
Mm-hmm.
Did you know how to use fire to reach a melting point of the ore, make it soft?
The metal that you were planning on shaping into a specific tool.
And you shape it into that tool. Did you have that? Or were you just running around with a big bone from an animal that you recently, you know, ate, clubbing everyone over the head with that big bone?
And that's like a
very deadly weapon. But yes, they also used that. Bones also became, the bones of animals also became like tools. In many of those early civilizations across the world. So those are some of the particular things that take place. And it's actually there to instill some sort of a identity in your country. Now, I have to see the internet flooded with this massive ship, former Swedish naval ship that is literally preserved to the detail in the naval museum in Stockholm in Sweden. Helmut, it's literally to scale the ship. You walk on like those, what's those things, those little things that they construct in the warehouse. The ship is literally indoors. You walk on, you see how the thing operated, what was the kind of technology they had back then. It is cool. It's any adventurous paradise. Someone that has an adventurer mindset or that loves watching Indiana Jones movies, not the latest, not the one that came out 2 years ago. I'm talking about the ones that came out in the 70s and 80s, the first three. You'd absolutely love those things. However, it's a totally different scenario in Namibia. So, yeah.
But and then you are looking at the way that we want to preserve it now, right? Using technology. And okay, one question that I've always asked myself, and I know someone that is, you know, that is an anthropologist. And one question I asked her was, we have the oldest desert in the world.
Mm.
Yeah. And now, if you were to take, for example, the, you know, one of those deep underground penetrating scanning technology we have today, mm. Are you sure we don't have some kind of El Dorado hiding under there? It's like,
but that's the same thing that they used for Shark Island back in 2023, with the, to look at the real impact and to see whether or not there's still human remains on that Shark Island.
Yeah. And they found outcropping.
Yeah. And I sit with that report. It was two NGOs that were approached by the Ovarero and the Nama traditional leaders.
Mm-hmm.
Their representatives approached these guys to ask them, can you sort of like give us,
yeah, given some the, concrete, you know, given the dark history proof of this, yeah, place.
It's not just the notion of our passed on verbal history of, you know, of the event, but literally to set the scene so that people understand the true cultural, and historical value of Shark Island.
Mm-hmm.
Not to, that was most one of the arguments, when NWR was planning, obviously, and they obviously did continue with the camping facility.
Yeah.
Being constructed where they highlighted, where they cited the two local traditional authorities citing, you know, that it should be sort of like, it shouldn't be defaced. It shouldn't be, sort of like spoiled by a camping site for tourists.
Mm-hmm.
But then you can argue the same thing for Waterberg, Waterberg,
mm-hmm,
which was also another particular sort of like a mass killing ground. And it's also a lodge and a camping site.
You could argue, what would make it different from, okay, so Waterberg still, still preserves the, you know, still, preserves and acknowledges the honor and the historical, background.
Yeah.
Dark though it may be.
Yeah.
So, if it can run, take for example, before we continue, commercial break.
So, you've got everything sorted for tomorrow?
Yeah, man. Meat spice, poikis ready, even got some playlists lined up, bro.
And the crew? They're all coming, right?
Howie, everyone's in. It's gonna be lekker.
Wait. What about the tassies?
Bruh,
you can't get it without tassim, bruh. It's like cabana without salsa, dog. Tassim, bruh. Best together. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
It's time to win your share of 500,000 Namibian dollars in prizes with Windhoek Beer. Find one of the 100% real quotes broadcast across Namibia on billboards, in stores, in newspapers, and on social media. Buy any Windhoek Beer. SMS the underliner code to 75050 or scan the QR code to enter on WhatsApp. So spot a quote, grab a Windhoek Beer, and you could win. Windhoek, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. T's and C's apply.
Welcome back, and 9 minutes to the hour of 6. But before we continue, let's take a live read.
Vilvitje University's September intake 2025. All programs are fully accredited by NQA. Certificate in Health Sciences Foundation Level 4. This is a one-year full-time course available at all campuses. Certificate for Enrolled Nurse Midwife or Acushur Level 6. This is a 2 years full-time course available in Windhoek, Nkurunkuru, Kombat, Walvis Bay, Katimulilu, and Otapi. Diploma in Environmental Health Sciences Level 6. This is a 2 years full-time course available in Windhoek. Bachelor of Nursing and Midwifery Science Honours. This is a 4 years full-time course available in Windhoek, Nkurunkuru, Kombat, Walvis Bay, and Katimamulilu. Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health Nursing Level 8. This is a 1 year full-time course available in Windhoek. Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing Level 8. This is a 1 year full-time course available in Windhoek. The application period is 1 June to 30 June 2025. For more information, call 061-225-463 or 061-225-462. Velvet University, where everyone is an achiever.
Welcome back. If there's one thing that you find actually across the world is that every civilization try to the best of their ability to preserve information and pass it to the next generation. And that's one of those things that that I find fascinating about the Terracotta Warriors that were discovered, that was I think in 1974 back in China. Now it's amazing how they discovered, an army of pot clay type of made warriors, about 6,000 to 8,000 of them. Now, they basically discovered the whole site because it was basically buried in history. Mm. Literally. Now, because it was buried because of a sand deposit of a very long time. And this is an emperor's tomb. It obviously had to be hidden.
Yeah.
Qin Shi Huang, the guy that was so scared of life, decided to commission a whole armada to go and look for the elixir of life. But,
He did his best, man.
He tried, and also that's a terrible part about being an emperor. He kept telling his doctors, please find me something that will make me live forever. And I can imagine because of the fear of death, they kept giving homeboy mercury. And mercury is poisonous. Careful what you wish for. But now,
these guys, eh?
Bro was poisoned to death by something he thought was extending his life. Well, we all grow old and die. Let's just accept that reality.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just enjoy now. This is why I always tell for those of you that are waiting until you get married, you go ahead. But now, when you look at it, it was just a group of peasants. Persons that were digging for, I think they wanted to dig a well.
Mm.
They wanted to access underground water in their region. Then they found some type of a clay pot looking thing. And then that obviously generated a lot of attention, and then the government heard it and they were like, we're now declaring this place not for you guys to live.
Mm.
So they just said, that's when they dug the whole thing and realized that they were basically looking at an army of these things that were made. And, some of them were horsemen, some of them were, were ground troops. And then they, found out that, it was this guy, that was so scared of death. And actually to this day, his tomb is actually, is restricted by the Chinese government. You can't have, they have not opened it. And they, I think, you bet they're a bunch of booby traps and stuff. But, the goal was, I think homeboy's plan was, those were soldiers will protect him in the afterlife, which I respect the guy, because back in ancient Egypt and also ancient China, if you were the king's sweetheart and the king is dead, well, you are joining his majesty in the afterlife.
Use the word, Helmut, concubine, not sweetheart.
No, well, sweetheart back then that was it was Kamboroto, but anyway, that's today. And I don't know what they called them back then, but look, the point is, every civilization want to communicate.
Yeah.
And then now you have a lot of threats that's threatening preservation. Actually, it's not just a bunch of regular thieves.
Mm.
It has been mostly conquering and war.
Mm.
The reason why why it's very difficult to understand what type of, what Mayans what they, you know, the mains in South America, like the message they wanted to, you know, they wanted to communicate was because of the Spanish Inquisition, because they kept stealing all the resources and then burning the rest in order to convert everyone in the name of the God they thought was, you know, should be right for everyone.
Mm.
There you go. Religion again, I swear. Now, so when it comes to the preservation of heritage, I feel like we should, you know, look at it from a wider angle, not just from the physical ruins, but also what songs were sang in this place, what stories were told, what occupied these people as entertainment, what type of pottery did they use, what type of take for example plates. What was their main diet? And obviously anthropologists look at these things by testing. I don't know how, but, when it comes to some tombs in China, they have conducted, I don't know if you can call it an autopsy now at this point, and found that I think one princess, they were even able to find out what she had I think she died in her 20s.
Mm.
They were able to find out what she had. The day, what she had, I think, for lunch, breakfast, or dinner the day that she died. It was watermelon.
I know, dude.
This 200 years of, I'm like, wait, what?
I know.
So,
it's also one of the funny things that they realized with the pharaohs, Egyptian pharaohs.
Oh, King Tut, that's
they
also.
Were trying to understand why were the teeth so smooth. You know, the crown of the tooth.
Mm-hmm.
Why was it so smooth? Just for the scientists to go talk to dietitians, and they went and reviewed what were the conditions like to make bread, like in ancient Egypt. There was too much sand in your flour. Homeboys were chewing on, they were just crunching. They were just crunching them.
His Royal Majesty.
They were crunching their way through their bread.
Look, we really have to appreciate technology. Our ancestors went through hell.
It was a nightmare. It was a nightmare.
So, wait a second. So, the constant grinding, sort of like of sand mixed in the food.
It files down your tooth.
That's from someone, an aristocrat. What were the peasants eating?
Now, remember, we're talking about Egypt. It has deserts. So, there are sandstorms.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Your
storage facility, your storage technologies are also not of the kind that you can think of today.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was a fascinating particular subject matter to even just sit there going like, are you kidding me? Really? I thought, you know, the romance of the ancient times, people didn't have those issues of sand in the food. There was sand in your bread.
Okay, it's Friday. I'll just point it out. Back in 2022, and I found this on social media, historians were alleging that there were bee-powered vibrators back then. Commercial break.
Tune in to the F&B segment every Monday morning from 7:45 a.m. live on Eagle FM for early morning dose of financial education and account protection. The F&B segment is proudly brought to you by F&B Namibia.
Where was I? Excuse me. Yeah, back in 2022, it was revealed by some, it's actually still debatable to this day, how the ancient Egyptians managed to pull it off, that Cleopatra, the Cleopatra of Mark Anthony that we all know, Cleopatra the 7th, may have had a bee-powered adult toy. Man, if those bees escape. Now, this is why I don't like my mind now. So, we are going to basically look at this from a PG-rated standpoint. For me, if we are going to, you know, for me, if we are going to preserve culture, if we are going to talk about, you know, preservation of heritage, mm-hmm. Like, you know, world, because the World Heritage Council guys were at this event. If we're going to talk about this, please, let's preserve everything from games. Because there's a very common game that I played growing up, you know, Mancala games. Do you know what that is? Yeah, thank God. Now, if you look up those games, it's rarely played, you know, not on a competitive level. That, it turns out, okay, last time I checked, I'm yet to verify that, you know, just how correct that Wikipedia page is. For 2 years in a row, I think the gold medal was taken by South Korea.
Of what?
Mancala Games.
Mancala Games from Nigeria.
Is that Nigeria? Because
is it the bare knuckle boxing?
No, not that one. Where you have hang on a second. It's spelled M A. Yeah, it's spelled M A N C L. Well, I can't show you guys, but I can show him. What's that in Afrikaans?
Oh no. I understand now.
Yeah.
That specific game.
Yeah. Now, this is also one of those traditional games that are still played today, but it's really difficult to trace. Like, it's not difficult. A lot of historians say its origin can be traced to modern day. Basically what you'd like to refer to as the Middle East.
Mm.
Even though for us it's not the Middle East, it's more like the North, because we are not in the West. So all this obviously requires preservation. And one thing I know is that, for a country, more like a continent that is the most diverse on the, on the planet, that means every tribe has its own folk tales.
Yeah.
Every tribe has its own, you know, traditional games and traditional music. So that means a buffet of entertainment, more like a material to pick from, especially, movie wise. Now, I think that is where virtual reality and what's the other reality one? Augmented reality now would come in handy.
Mm.
Yeah. But, I just wanna, look, there's nothing, I would just want to fire up my virtual reality goggles and then, you know, chill with King Tut for a few minutes. And by the way, King Tut also is one of those people that was actually examined by medical professionals and found out that he died at a very young age. And he had a lot of medical conditions that were attributed to inbreeding. Because it turns out, giving it in the family was not in just some videos back then, it was practical reality in a bunch of royal families. In the name of keeping power in the family and money. It didn't go well. Now, for homeboy, suffered a lot of medical conditions. I think he didn't walk or talk until the age of 4 or 8, somewhere there. And even then, he had to walk with a cane. So, please, find a stranger. Again, I hate my mind. 4 minutes past the hour of 6.
I'll let you hang with the with your mind thinking.
Believe me. I hate my mind. 5 minutes past the hour of 6. If you just tuned in, we are talking about preservation of culture, preservation of not really, basically more. This discussion, the whole of discussion, was basically tailored towards the physical infrastructure that, you know. Hang on a second. There are types of bread that are you know that falls under UNESCO World Heritage.
I think pizza is one of them. It's one of the most unique. Culinary things that come out of ancient times.
Now, is pizza Italian or Roman? Now, because that part of the world is a tricky one.
No, it really depends, because apparently the city of Naples claims to be the founding hub of pizza in Italy. But you find flatbread the whole of the Mediterranean through. You just find it in different variations. Some guys put leaves on them. Some guys put olives on them. Some guys put, you know, just, they just bake it and that's,
eat it like that.
It's something part of another meal.
Mm-hmm.
Or you get other places where they literally, you know, make it smaller portions of it, slightly more powerful. And you still find some of those bakeries still baking the same method up until today, using wood and clay brick ovens or clay ovens.
You know,
basically.
You know something that I have to look up? I think fork and knife must also fall, you know, maybe, you know, fall under the World Heritage Protection something. And that also becomes, man, this is why I like to say that when it comes to colonialism, the Italians colonized us in a way that we couldn't see coming. Because if you go in our kitchen, it's Italian everywhere. Fork and knife.
I think the Ethiopians will.
The Ethiopians can explain.
And the Eritreans, they will literally be, you know, on the offense level of 1,000 above, out of 10 with that statement, Helmut.
I know.
Yeah. Because they were also one of our last sort of like, and first independent African countries back then. Just for the funny side that the Haile Selassie, King Haile Selassie's grandfather wanted to be part of the Berlin Conference.
That guy was not serious with life.
Do you know how tall that guy was, Helmut?
No.
But do you know how he wanted to show up?
Mm.
They didn't wear, back then, us Africans, we didn't wear shoes. And he literally wrote a letter to Otto von Bismarck. I want to be there. I also want a part in splitting up Africa.
He wanted to participate in colonialism? Well, he was lucky the Italians were terrible at colonizing. It was the French or the British. It was those guys. They just keep coming back. I like to look at it in a way that they came the first time. We kicked their behinds, they ran away, they came the second time, and you know, the sun bended them, went back, invented sunscreen and came back. Still won, when they went back, they passed by the Chinese, stole some gunpowder, made guns out of it, came back. So, spirit, no surrender, was their middle name. 8 minutes past the hour of six, and that brings us to the end of our show. Preserving our culture, on the other hand, is not only a UNESCO's responsibility or World Heritage's responsibility.
Yeah.
It's each and every single one of us. I think the first thing that we are losing, though, is the language. Languages are going.
Yes, they are.
Yep. Every child nowadays is junior.
Well, unless you want to be a meme, but yeah, don't worry.
You know what? You all have a good Friday.
And let's see each other on Sunday, guys. Or on Monday, when Helmut and I will be back.
Yeah.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
Ipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe utite okoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwala. Ono ngeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna ebitoda njuka okukwetera oipindi konu konda doyi nawa nune udo otukwetera o special ange tashake ngeje pa omarudi tayo loka opone ujendi fenawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge kwa tafanona Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatuimwe mbali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye
Eagle FM, let's see.